Welcome to Sleepover Cinema, where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of those who pledge allegiance to the flag of Matthew Lillard's artistry. I'm Hannah Leach.
And I'm Audrey Leach. We are the sister filmmaking duo, also known as Two Pink Productions, and we haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them.
We're going to explore the good, the bad, and the nonsensical of the movies that first inspired our love for film in an attempt to answer the question, are these movies actually good? And at the end of the day, do we really care if they are?
Today we are talking about 1996's Scream.
That's my scream.
Nice.
I was really convincing, I'm sure.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Well, just some scary movie.
Like scary movies.
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
You know what's been stuck in my head, like, all day?
What?
Scream from High School Musical 3.
Oh. Nice.
And I just put together why that is. It's because of what we're covering. So you're probably seeing, based off the title of this episode, that we are covering our very first horror slasher film today.
Other than Jennifer's Body.
Okay, other than Jennifer's Body, you're really right. You're really, really right. I guess widely known as a horror or slasher movie. So yeah, we're covering this movie because the people asked for it, they demanded it, and also Hunter, Audrey's roommate and former guest on the pod for Charlie's Angels, is going to join us to share some of his passion and insight on Scream in the second half. So you get to look forward to that as well. Are you feeling spooky? Are you feeling
kinda, sickening? Kinda.
You look spooky.
I got a darker, like, lipstick thing, like lip liner and lipstick than I usually have on. And I also bought pencil eyeliner again. Like, I'm like, it's on my waterline. And I kind of forgot how much that can enhance an eye look. But I just stayed away from it for a long time because it does usually go to my inner corner after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But like it really does enhance the look and it does make it more like witchy, I feel also.
Yes.
And
it adds some intensity.
Yeah. The like 90s makeup look of like a berry lip and like smoky tan-ish brown, like if your whole lid is like tannish brown and it's like no liquid eyeliner, that look to me is good.
I was trying to give some sort of look. In fact, when I left the house, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I'm wearing skinny jeans and I got those platform Converse high tops.
Yeah.
I'm wearing this shirt and that. And as I left the house, I asked Josh if he liked my interpretation of being a jet from West Side Story. Because that is what I look like way more than anything spooky.
You wouldn't catch a jet in skinny jeans, though.
Yeah, you would. You totally would. They already wear skinny
They're
jeans.
They're not like skinny jeans. They're not like skinny jeans in the way of
skinty?
Like,
not
of like
jeans.
Our middle school. I feel like they wear like Levi's.
Okay, the update to the Glee journey is that I just watched the episode where Blaine's older brother comes to town. Oh my God, I got like jumped by the Karofsky episode when he ends up in the hospital. I got jumped by that one. And then I got jumped by the Quinn getting hit by a car while texting and driving PSA episode.
You know, with all that said, you still ain't seen nothing yet. This shit, this train does not slow down. It does not.
I'm sure. I actually was saying to Josh the other day, I was like, I think that we've finally entered the, like, downhill plummet of Glee. I think we're right on the crest of the downhill plummet.
Yeah.
I'm like 60% of the way through season three, so that would make sense.
Yep, a lot of people would consider the end of season three to be the end of Glee.
Question for the culture for this week.
The culture is super sick right now. It's actually really bad, period.
This I would like to hear input from the audience ultimately. Did you ever have a slutty Halloween costume as a high schooler? This is an actual question for the culture.
Well, what's the question for the culture?
Did you have a slutty Halloween costume?
Well, but that's just a fact.
Well, I didn't say, okay, fine. Should you have a slutty? That's such a stupid question. How do we feel about slutty Halloween costumes in high school? Maybe that's the question. I feel like that's kind of, it's almost the peak of the slutty Halloween costume.
I mean, if you have a way to wear one, like if your parents aren't around or like you have like an actual party to go to, like then maybe.
Right. Like if there are straight men in your life, then you can have one. But otherwise,
well, not right. I'm not even saying that, but just like if, do you have a venue? Do you have a place to go that isn't your own house?
Do you have a venue booked for your slutty Halloween costume?
That's what I'm saying. In high school, the options are limited.
My senior year of high school, I actually did. And I don't even remember what I was. All I know is that there are pictures of me in a maroon tank top undershirt thing, black sequined shorts and fishnets.
It was supposed to be Lady Gaga.
Oh. How do you remember that?
I just remember one picture of that.
I think I had the lightning bolt on my face.
Yeah. I wouldn't even count. I don't know that I would count that as slutty, though. It's not like you were in a bra.
For me, it was. No. For me, it was. For high school me, it was. Yeah. Which is saying it's pretty tame. Did you ever have one?
No, I was Lord for Halloween senior year of high school.
That is really, really tasteful. I'm not surprised.
Everyone used to say in high school that I looked like Lord, which was completely off base because I don't actually look like her, but we had curly hair at the time. And so that's why.
Yeah. You and Lord, the collective.
Yeah, because Lord doesn't have curly hair anymore. It's really sad. Just like Taylor Swift, they all forsake me, all the white women with curly hair.
Sad. We will put something on our story or something asking for you to submit pics of your sluttiest Halloween costumes because what is Halloween without a good slutty Halloween costume?
Very quickly,
there's some items on the agenda we have to get to before we move on.
We've talked about it in the past. We said we would follow up on it. One being Funny Girl with Lea Michele. I saw it after being my tickets were rudely snatched from my claws because Lea Michele contracted COVID on the day I was supposed to go. And I actually went through the 5 stages of grief.
Your tickets weren't snatched. Your opportunity to see Lea was snatched.
But the tickets ultimately were snatched because they wouldn't let people buy back their tickets for another day at the same price. So it very much felt like your tickets were taken from you. I saw it. She was amazing. The show, Funny Girl, is bad. It just is. Like, it's not an entertaining Broadway show, but she did a great job. And I also have a conspiracy that they have been, and I don't know if this is the production or like Beanie's team or like something, but I have a conspiracy theory that they're taking down any bootleg videos of Beanie performing because I can only find audio of it. There's only audio of her performing with pictures and there's no video, which makes no sense because there is a ton of bootleg videos of Lea in the show. And I just think that this is my conspiracy theory. And I get it because like she would want it. If I were Beanie, I would also want the videos taken down. So I get it.
Why? So there couldn't be like a side-by-side comparison?
Yeah. And people are still doing that. They're doing it with the video of Lea and the audio of Beanie. And it is just... it's just so unfair. It's like not a fair fight. And then the second update, I saw Bros. Last week we talked about slightly marginalized celebrities blaming the failure of their art on the audience. And it was not good. And I'm so...
It was bad.
It was not good. With all of the good aspects of it, all of the things that should be helping it, I guess, it's kind of more like a good in theory and mediocre in practice thing. It's really hard to say I'm making a blockbuster rom-com without box office drawn names. He's not enough on his own to bring that.
Yeah, definitely not.
So I kind of feel like he has really, really good intentions, but the writing, the editing, it felt very first draft to me almost. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. Like, I don't want to shit on it, but it wasn't good. It wasn't very funny and it wasn't very romantic. So you're kind of failing on both ends.
Yikes.
Yeah. For the most part, it's just not really for the people in their 20s. Like, Billy's, what, in his 40s? I think they might get...
Yeah.
They'll probably get more of a kick out of it than, like, I do. Or that gays our age do. Because it kind of felt like we were far past a lot of the jokes and, like, a lot of the mental state of, like, where they
like
are.
Like, trying to be masked and stuff like that.
Just, like, tackling those sort of topics from a very surface-level point of view. And it's like, yeah, we know. we understand.
Yeah. Okay, getting into Scream. Okay, so let's get into the facts. Scream was released on December 20th, 1996, and was rated R. I forgot to get why it's rated R, but I'm sure it's gore, sex, thematic elements, etc. And of course, it was directed by Wes Craven, who is a ubiquitously known horror icon. He wrote Nightmare on Elm Street, New Nightmare, and The People Under the Stairs, among a lot of other things. But he directed the entire Scream franchise, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Hills Have Eyes, The Last House on the Left, and he's from Cleveland, and he's a Leo. And the screenplay was written by Kevin Williamson, who wrote the entire Scream franchise, including the TV series. He wrote 171 episodes of The Vampire Diaries, also 128 episodes of Dawson's Creek. And Scream was his first writing credit, which is a slay. Now getting into these synopses, I will do the first one. IMDb. A year after her mother's death, Sydney Prescott and her friends started experiencing some strange phone calls. They later learned the calls were coming from a crazed serial killer in a white-faced mask and a large black robe looking for revenge. His phone calls usually consist of many questions, the main one being, "What's your favorite scary movie?" Along with much scary movie trivia, ending with bloody pieces of innocent lives scattered around the small town of Woodsboro.
The letterboxed one is, a killer known as Ghostface begins killing off teenagers, and as the body count begins rising, one girl and her friends find themselves contemplating the rules of horror films as they find themselves living in a real life one. That's not okay. That's like not okay.
I know. Okay, now last but not least, Rotten Tomatoes. The sleepy little town of Woodsboro just woke up screaming. There's a killer in their midst who's seen a few too many scary movies. Suddenly, nobody is safe as the psychopath stalks victims, taunts them with trivia questions, then rips them to bloody shreds. It could be anybody.
That was pretty good.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Taunts them with trivia questions is so funny and so accurate. Okay, Audrey. You gotta get a load of this.
How is this even possible? There's like 20 taglines. Okay, number one, a new thriller from Wes Craven. Number two, someone is playing a deadly game. Someone who has seen way too many scary movies. Number three, name the killer. December 20th. Number five, he's taken his love of fear one step too far. Number five.
Yes.
Solving this mystery is going to be murder. Number six, I'll be right back. Number seven, don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to escape. Number 8, someone's taken their love of scary movies one step too far. Number 9, make your last breath count. Number 10, now someone is victim and someone is a suspect. Number 11, now every... Oh, wait. What? Wait. Now everybody is a victim and everybody is a suspect. Number 12, from the first name in suspense comes the last word in fear. What? What does that mean? And no then idea. Lastly, number 13, also the fact there's 13. Wow.
Wow.
Don't answer the door. Don't leave the house. Don't answer the phone. But most of all, don't scream.
They were bringing it with the tagline.
Nuts.
It is.
The cast of Scream is pretty iconic for white people. Anyway. some really grade A white people in here. Neve Campbell plays Sydney. She is best known for all the Scream movies, but she's also known for a film called Wild Thing and a ton. She's just been in a ton of TV. That's something I was noticing with all of these people, except for Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. They're all a lot. There's been a lot of TV. Drew Barrymore plays Casey, who is only in the first scene of this movie. She's best known for Charlie's Angels, Never Been Kissed, Ever After, and 50 First Dates. And a fun fact about, if you don't know, Drew Barrymore in this movie is that she was offered the role of Sydney, of course. She was a huge movie star at the time, up and coming. Slash up and coming as like an adult. And she actually picked the role of Casey. She was like, oh, wouldn't it be so much cooler if like people come into this movie thinking that I'm the star and then I get killed in the first scene and they have to like readjust. And so that like this film isn't going to follow like the rules that you think it is. And Drew Barrymore's face is the poster of the film. So people really thought that she was the star. So that's like a part of what makes it really iconic. Yeah. And then Courtney Cox plays Gail Weathers. She's best known for Friends and the Scream movies and other TV. I also learned today that she had to like convince Wes Craven to cast her in this. It wasn't a given that she would get this part because she was known for such a specific role. And then Skeet Ulrich plays Billy. He's best known for Scream, The Craft, Riverdale, and a lot of other TV spots.
Wow.
Matthew Lillard plays Stuart. He's best known for Scooby-Doo 1 and 2 and SLC Punk. David Arquette plays Deputy Dewey. He's best known for the Scream movies, Never Been Kissed, and then he has actually executive produced a lot of TV. And then Rose McGowan plays Tatum. She's best known for Jawbreaker and Charmed.
I'm crying at this next list of things. Oh, yeah. Where it ends.
Yeah. Okay. And then I was like, oh, I might as well include Roger Jackson, who is the voice on the phone in all of the Scream movies. So he has got a very iconic voice. And his credits go back decades and it's extremely dense. But the one thing that I picked out is the voice of Mojo Jojo from the Powerpuff Girls, because that's good.
Oh my God. I used to draw Mojo Jojo a lot back in the day. His head is just so good to draw. The thing with the, it's just so good. Budget. The budget for Scream was $14 million. Upon opening weekend on December 20th, 1996, it earned $6,354,586 with an ultimate worldwide gross of $103,046,663, making it the highest grossing horror slash slasher film of all time.
Slash slasher film,
followed by its own sequels and then Freddy versus Jason.
It changed the game. For sure.
Critic and audience opinions. Okay, so the critic score on Rotten Tomatoes for this movie was 79%, and the average Letterboxd rating, is 4 stars. And the critic consensus on Rotten Tomatoes is, horror icon Wes Craven's subversive deconstruction of the genre is sly, witty, and surprisingly effective as a slasher film itself, even if it's a little too cheeky for some. Now for Roger Ebert what he had to say. He gave it 3 stars and he said, "What did I think about this movie? As a film critic, I liked it. I liked the in-jokes and the self-aware characters. At the same time, I was aware of the incredible level of gore in this film. It is really violent. Is the violence diffused by the ironic way the film uses it and the comments on it? For me, it was. For some viewers, it will not be, and they will be horrified. Which category do you fall in? Here's an easy test. When I mentioned Fangoria earlier in this review, did you know what I was talking about?" And then we have some other critics. Audrey, do you want to play these roles?
Okay, first critic says, "Poised on the knife edge between parody and homage, Wes Craven's Scream is a deft, funny, shrewdly unsettling tribute to such slasher exploitation thrillers as Terror Train, New Year's Evil, and Craven's own A Nightmare on Elm Street." The second critic says, "Craven couldn't have made this movie if he didn't understand both his craft and what his fans expect. This is a horror film designed with movie lovers in mind. Beneath all the gore and violence, and there's a lot of both, there's a keen sense of wit and intelligence which sophisticated viewers are likely to appreciate. And that makes this much more than a common slasher flick. Have fun and remember that movies don't create psychos, movies make psychos more creative." And the third critic says, "The picture is so full of cross references, self-mockery, and movies within movies, including a stalking that's recorded on video, that it can't help turning into a precious 2-hour in-joke."
No one is wrong.
Yeah, everyone's spitting facts.
Okay, so now for Common Sense Media. They gave this movie 4 stars and rated it age 16 plus. They say it's a teen slasher parody that has strong violence and language. Families can talk about why Scream remains so popular. What's the appeal of horror movies? They also can talk about how the movie seems to parody and celebrate the teen slasher movie genre. How does it use humor to poke fun at horror movie cliches? And how does the violence make it a part of the very genre it parodies? How are teens portrayed here? Is this a realistic depiction? Why or why not?
The audience score is 79%, which is really high. What are you saying it's a tie with?
It's the same as the critic score, I think, for the first time.
Oh, no, I don't think that's a first.
Okay.
I would have to go back. I would have to check every single episode we've ever done. But
I'm sure you want to do that.
Yeah. Audience opinions. 1 star on Rotten Tomatoes. Some person says, "This is such a cheesy movie. I can barely get past the beginning. It was so lame. A slasher movie that's so easy to put together. You know who's doing what. It's not hard to figure out. A mortal person doing the killings is not scary. This movie is boring, and I give it a 1.5 out of 5. That's the best I can do."
Next review, 4.5 stars on Rotten Tomatoes. "If you're looking for a smart, self-aware horror film, then look no further than Scream. The film came out at a time when the horror genre was dying out, and it was a breath of fresh air, delivering a unique, inventive cinematic experience and is one of the most influential horror movies ever." And we're going to come back to that claim about it reviving the genre in just a second here.
2 stars on Letterboxd. "I wish it would have committed to being either a fun, absurd parody or a smart and subversive take on horror films that rises above the tropes of slashers and delivers a genuinely surprising and thrilling entry in the genre. It sort of attempts both, but not well. It's stuck somewhere in the middle and it doesn't succeed at either."
And last but not least, 4.5 stars on Letterboxd. "I love cinema." Okay, so for cultural context, I kind of wanted to look into this refrain that I kept seeing, which was that, like, the genre was dying out, the genre was in peril, and then Scream saved it from implosion or whatever. So I found this review article thing on Movie Meister Reviews. And I just picked a couple little excerpts from it that I think kind of shed some light on this claim. So this is what the article said. "Before Scream, the state of horror was okay. Not great, but okay. A lot of the big series that started in the 70s and 80s were getting old by the time the 90s began."
The very early 90s were a time when major horror series were falling to pieces, but that didn't mean that we were done. There were still some really good horror movies that were there to keep the genre alive. It's important to remember that when Scream was due to be released, no one believed it was going to do well. You also have to remember that it was being directed by a man who had just come off Vampire in Brooklyn. You know, that awful vampire movie with Eddie Murphy. People thought that he'd lost his touch.
So obviously Scream goes on, it does a really good job, blah, blah, blah. So why does Scream get the credit for saving horror? It wasn't dead anyway, so why should this little slasher flick get the title of the film that saved horror? Well, it shouldn't. It didn't really even change it. What it did do very well was capitalize on the change that was already happening.
Movies tend to get titles like that when all it was is it kind of hit the zeitgeist at the right time, and then it happens to be economically successful, and then that movie becomes the one that everyone points to that is like, this movie changed cinema history, but it just kind of had really good luck and good timing.
When did we first watch What Do We Remember? Also, I want to ask, are we horror fans?
I saw it for the first time maybe in like 2019-ish. And no, neither of us grew up watching horror films, but I was like, it wasn't our favorite thing to watch, obviously.
We literally didn't watch it, period.
Yeah. And I was terrified. I was scared of a decal of Goofy in the entrance of Blockbuster at the time. So
yeah,
whatever gene it is that children have where they like, they like haunted houses or they like scary movies, that missed me completely.
Yeah. It's because our parents, they both are not into that at all.
No. I mean, neither of our parents are really into movies, to be honest. But, I won't speak for you, but I was terrified. And in high school, some of my friends started being like, let's go see The Conjuring. Let's have a sleepover and watch Paranormal Activity. And I was like, no, but then they would do it anyway, and I would just hide the whole time.
I watched this movie for the first time last night, so very fresh in my mind. I definitely did not like scary stuff growing up, just like Audrey said. I had a roommate and really good friend in college who is like the horror girl, like so into it, like mainstream, obscure from any time period, also worked in a haunted house at one point in like, I think late high school, she worked in a haunted house. And so she really introduced me to horror and was like kind of showed it to me as like a science or like, you know, it's like adrenaline more than actually being disturbed. So I developed an appreciation for the genre then. I still have not seen that many horror movies, but I feel like I'm finally at a time in my life where I could really appreciate them, like the adrenaline rush of it all. So maybe this is the beginning of my horror movie consumption era, because I've seen The Conjuring, but I like looked away at the scariest parts. But Patrick Wilson is in it, which is motivation for me.
I mean, I have that. Yeah, what you describe with her is exactly what I have with Hunter, where it's like, had I not become friends with Hunter, I don't know that I really ever would have watched a lot of horror, but no regrets.
It's a cool, I feel like it's a really underrated genre.
And what's interesting now is that it's like the only genre where studios are like taking risks on mid-budget films, but they are in the horror genre because it has that backup element that it can rely on of like thrill or adrenaline. So they're like, okay, well, you know, if it has that aspect in it, then we can take some more economical risks on like who's the director or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it is a great opportunity for like up and coming filmmakers to, if you contribute to that genre, you have like a way better shot of making something more substantial.
So, all that being said, we're about to take our little midway break. When we come back, you will hear a conversation between Audrey and Hunter about Scream, about Hunter's early experiences with it and his perspective on the movie.
And probably all the movies, too.
Yeah, I can only imagine that it would make a big impact on him.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we will be back. Don't pick up the phone. Don't try to open the door.
What's your
Don't
favorite
try to leave.
Scary movie?
Don't scream.
BRB.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.
So I am here with Hunter Livingston.
Hi.
I'm back.
Who Hi. Was previously on our Charlie's Angels episode. Mm-hmm. We didn't even cover Full Throttle, which is the one that Hunter feels most passionate about. Yeah. However, I felt weird about starting with not the first one. So we started okay, with the first one.
We'll come back.
Huge spoiler alerts for all of the Scream movies. I'm guessing probably a good portion of you haven't seen all of them. Just know you're about to hear some shit. So the reason that I wanted to bring Hunter back onto the Scream episode is because he has a history, nostalgia, knowledge, diehard fan thing for the Scream movies that neither Hannah or I possess. And I feel like to cover this movie and to not have that perspective on the podcast would be like a little rude or like a little wrong.
A little disrespectful.
Yeah, because I want to bring franchise. Reverence, you know. Please describe to us where you were, what the situation was when you saw the first Scream movie, if you remember.
The first Scream movie, the very first horror film I can actually remember is like watching Final Destination in sixth grade. I feel like maybe I watched the first Scream movie and didn't see the rest of the series until later. Like maybe my mom or something showed me the first one. And then when I was like really into it, I like binged watched all of them.
When do you have memories of like, I'm into the Scream movies?
Probably middle school was the first time that I saw all of them, because the fourth film came out in 2011, which means I was a freshman in high school, and I saw that one in theaters. So definitely like eighth grade. I probably watched all of them.
Like binge watched.
Yep.
And so that's when you were like into like the lore of it as well.
Yep. But I feel like, I don't know, for Scream, I never got involved with other fans because I feel like everybody's opinions kind of bothered me. I was like, I don't need to hear yours. Like, I have mine. Because like everybody likes coming up with their own like motives for the killers of Scream.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, none of these are good. So I'm not going to participate. And then like when I was making like my own little horror movies, I like did like a Scream thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm making my own Scream movie.
Yeah.
I never joined in the conversation.
Horror. The genre.
Uh-huh.
I feel like a lot of our listeners, there are some Aquamarine bitches, there's some
Arnor.
Freaky Friday bitches. Like,
right.
Obviously, we do have listeners who are into horror, but right. I think for the most part, I'm guessing a lot of them, a lot of us, did not grow up gravitating towards horror. So like I was saying to Hannah, like I feel like I just missed that gene. Not only did I miss that gene, but my parents weren't into it. If my parents watched it, I think I would have had a fighting chance.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Right.
I just want to know if you remember, was Final Destination the first thriller or horror movie you saw where you were like into the violence?
Yes. Well, I had always been into like the scary things, like Goosebumps. I watched that in elementary school and I read all of the books, all the Goosebumps books. So I was always into things that like used to freak me out. But I feel like sixth grade was the first year that my parents like allowed me to watch actual horror films.
Yeah.
And I feel like I just remember Final Destination so clearly because it was the first time I saw like really intense gore. And I was like, what is this? And
you've I was just so
into it.
You've literally been chasing the high ever since.
No, literally, nothing will ever be the first Final Destination viewing. I was in the living room, my parents fell asleep, and the movie was on, and
that
I just kept
so
watching.
Illegal.
I know. I was like, I'm not going to wake them up. I'm going to keep watching. I think when they fell asleep, it was around when, like, what's his name gets his head decapitated. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so into it. I was like, oh my God, it's 9 p.m.
You're like,
I'm sick. No,
literally,
I was like, I'm enjoying this too much. And then I watched so many more in sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer's Body.
Yeah.
That was sixth grade.
Illegal viewing.
Yeah, illegal viewing in the friend's basement.
In your view, where do you think that Scream falls on the horror spectrum? I don't know. I guess when I wrote the question, I was thinking of it on the spectrum of like respectable horror.
Right. I think it's super high on respectable horror. Even though it's like people don't really find Scream actually scary.
Right.
But I feel like to be considered a respectable horror film, it doesn't have to be scary. That's not like the criteria for it. Wes Craven, the director, obviously he's an iconic horror director. Mm-hmm. Like so many horror films and like the director and the writers of Scream, they have so much respect for the genre itself. And like Scream is like a huge love letter to horror films.
Yeah.
Because like the whole thing is based on like the rules of horror.
Right.
And it's all based around like what was popular in like the 80s,
mm-hmm.
like 80s slashers. That's where all those rules come from. Fans of horror love Scream. Because Scream loves horror.
Right. Yes. And it does feel warm and fuzzy in that
way.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's also why people talk about how like Scream revived horror, because like the 80s was dominated kind of by like the slasher film. And then towards the end of the 80s, they were declining. Like the last Nightmare on Elm Street film did like terribly and got like really bad reviews and they were just silly. And it was like the slasher film was dying.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Scream came in like the mid to late 90s and it kind of rewrote that narrative
of
the slasher film. They're like, okay, these movies did get bad towards the end because they are relying on all these tropes. So like, what if we poke fun at that? And then it's like, this is how you survive a horror movie.
Yeah. Which Scream movie is your favorite? If you had to choose one.
Such a tough question. And I've ranked them before. I really love the opening of Scream 2. Like to me, that is like peak Scream opening for a film.
Which one, like if all the movies were laid out in front of you, which one are you like, I want to rewatch this? Obviously it depends, but high rewatchability.
I guess the first one.
Yeah.
But that's not my favorite one. Very tough. I mean, I guess the first one is my favorite.
Yeah.
I guess. Like, if one has to be, I can choose an element from all five.
Yeah.
The first Scream, I think maybe the motives might be the best. And I like the final showdown at the party. That whole end sequence I like a lot. Obviously, Drew Barrymore in the beginning. Love it. The second one is also the opening that I love in the movie theater. I don't know. I kind of find the whole college campus aspect of it a little bit boring. Scream 2, I like that the killer is Billy's mom, but I don't like that Mickey is the second killer because he's kind of just thrown in. But I think that was because the script was leaked originally. And so people on the internet found out who the killers were. So then they had to throw in Mickey. Scream 3, I like that it takes place in Hollywood, even though people were like, what is this film? And it's kind of funny. In ways that the others aren't. Okay, the fourth one, the opening is good too. I do like how they're all at Kirby's house at the end.
Oh my God.
Oh, I love that.
Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah, I love that. What's her name? Emma Roberts is the killer. That's like one of the best killers, I think, in Scream.
That is something.
Oh, and I love the ending at the hospital. So good.
If you need any motivation to watch these movies, please.
You have to get to the fourth
you
one.
You need to get to the fourth
you
one.
You have to.
All my Aquamarine stands out there. You can do it.
Yeah, it's really true. I think my least favorite opening is in the fifth fifth one that just came out this past year, but I love this idea of a requel. It's so funny. A requel is basically a reboot and a sequel, and that's a completely new term that has come about in like the 2020s.
Past 5 years.
Yeah. Because of all of like the resurgence of IP and making so many sequels based off of existing films already. So like the original Screams had no idea what a requel was. But when Scream 4 came out in 2011, people thought that was the end of the franchise. And then with this fifth one, they were like, we're going to reboot the series, meaning there's going to be more sequels now following this fifth one. It's still a sequel because it's still following the events of the original franchise, which is why they called it Scream and not Scream 5.
Yeah.
Because this is the first one of a new rebooted series. Because now there's a new protagonist.
Same world, new characters.
Yeah, same world, new characters. Same characters. The legacy characters are there, and that's also a part of why it's called a requel.
Right.
Because it is a sequel, but it's a reboot.
And that shit is confusing.
And they also talk about that in the fifth Scream when they're trying to figure out who the killer is.
Yeah.
Because like the motives of the killer, of the killers in like the fifth one is that they basically hate what they did with the newest Stab movie. They were like, Stab 8 is terrible. Like they need to remake Stab 8. So then the killers in Scream 5 were like, we're going to make our own version of Stab.
Yeah.
To give the creator something
to work with. It's so funny. Oh
and
my
then
God.
All the characters are like, oh my gosh, the killers are making a requel.
Yeah. It's like so meta. Like if you're not somewhat, if you're not somewhat interested in like film talk, it's probably not your franchise.
Yeah, you gotta be
prepared. If you're listening to this, then you are. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you saw it three times in theaters, right? I saw it twice. You were like so inspired by it.
Oh my God.
The
yeah.
whole thing that you wrote your own idea.
I wrote my own.
The requel Scream 2, kind of.
Yeah. I wrote my own opening for Scream 2, which would be Scream 6.
Yeah.
But it's called Scream 2.
Or whatever it's called. Is it called Scream 2?
Yeah, it's called Scream 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wrote my own opening.
But I don't know if you should disclose the idea.
No, I'm not going to.
I don't think you should.
Because I don't want
for the public
to steal it.
But just know that it bangs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, okay, if you were to give some horror film recommendations to people who want to get into the genre and they haven't, what would you say?
I feel like maybe something like The Sixth Sense would be good.
Mm-hmm.
The M. Night movie, because it's kind of, it is a horror film, but there, it kind of leans more drama than horror. It's like a drama with some horror elements in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the twist is really good. It's like the most spoiled twist of all time. But that's like kind of a good intro to the genre. The Conjuring is a good one. The Conjuring is like scary, but that's like a great example of a good popcorn horror film.
So thank you, Hunter, for joining us on this discussion. By us, I mean me. On this discussion of Scream. Also, for anybody who is interested in independent short horror films, boy, do I have something for you.
Boy, do I got a film for you.
So, Hunter has written and is directing a short horror film called From the Flesh. On Instagram, it is at From the Flesh Film, and I'm producing it along with him, and we'll be shooting it next month. There is currently a Kickstarter. The link to that will be in the description and in the show notes.
From the Flesh is about a gifted teenage singer who auditions for the choir at a local youth ministry, and she discovers the sinister reason for their devotion when they ask to have her voice.
Uh-oh.
So like when they want to take her voice from
physically
they are going to extract her vocal cords because they want that organ.
Hey, and we're leaving it at that. I mean, that's very intriguing. We have casted Miss Kennedy Walsh as the lead role, Noah, in this film.
Yes.
And we're super lit about that.
Yeah, very excited.
Again, at From the Flesh Film. The Kickstarter link is in the description. And you could follow Hunter if you want to. At Hunter Clivingston.
Hunter Clivingston.
Hunter C. Livingston.
Hunter C. like Charles Livingston.
And thank you again for joining me, King.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation between Audrey and Hunter. I know I, for one, can't wait to hear it because I have not heard it yet.
So before we get into our opinions, I'm going to give you a pop quiz. And I feel like you should get these. I tried to make them, like, simple. If you know the answer, just say it. If you need the choices, tell me you want the choices.
Okay.
Number one, in what fictional town does Scream take place?
Woodsboro.
Yes, correct.
I only know that because you just read it in this recording. Yeah.
You said it like three times. I was like, dang, she's going to get that one because she's saying it.
Yeah.
Number two, what is Randy's number one rule for surviving a horror movie?
Don't have sex.
Yeah.
Hey.
Good job.
Okay.
And finally, how many seconds delay does the hidden camera at Stu's house have?
30?
Yeah.
Hey.
Good job.
Yay. Okay. I'm proud of myself.
Yeah.
I was paying attention. Aren't you proud of me?
Yeah, this is what happens when you pay attention.
It's when I'm not writing shit down. Also, I'm pretty sure both of those things are disclosed really close
they
to each
are,
other.
They are, yeah.
Yeah. I guess overall, what do you think of this movie?
I want to ask you that first.
Okay. I feel like this is not going to be well received. Are the thrills and chills good? I would say yes. Are they always that good? I would say no. There are some parts that are pretty fucking goofy, which I think is sort of on purpose.
Totally on purpose.
Yeah, like the one where it's like he's like in the woods and it does that like zoom into the woods.
Yeah.
Like just
I mean,
shit
it is
like that.
90s.
Like, it is funny. I guess this is like, it applies to the whole thing. If you're me and you're coming into it with like only a few drops of understanding of the genre, it feels a little bit like hanging out with a group of friends where they have a bunch of inside jokes and you're like someone's girlfriend or boyfriend who's like standing there like,
yeah,
haha, yeah. You know, like you're included by proxy of getting the thrills and chills, but like the meat and potatoes of it, you like, are yeah, like, what?
Yeah, that's so true. Like this movie is not for people who don't watch horror movies, like at all. So much of the dialogue has to do with horror movies as a genre. If you, yeah, obviously when the first one came out, nobody had seen the sequels, but they just build on that and build on that and build on that in the next ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like very fun. What they do with it is very fun. It becomes like a meta thing where eventually there's a movie made about Sidney Prescott's story called Stab, and the Stab movies become a series as well. So like it becomes Whoa. Very meta.
I can get into that. I think I just thought of a good way to describe how it feels like. So this is a movie where they talk about movies a lot and like the rules of surviving horror or whatever. It kind of reminds me of when you see like a musical that's like about being in a musical.
Yeah.
Like
Insider,
like chorus line
Insider
or something.
Baseball or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Like that's kind of what it feels like. I just felt a little bit like, okay, I get it. Like, okay. But at the same time, I think that's a me problem, not a the movie being a problem.
I mean, if it's not your thing, it's just not. Like, I get that. Had I not had context, you know, if I watched it by myself, like, I really am not sure how I would interpret everything. One thing to be said is that Neve Campbell does do a great job in bringing, okay, like, a grounded presence to such crazy, kind of like cartoony dialogue. But did you enjoy the first scene though?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was so good. When you can just crank something out that's like that iconic, Like, damn. That's impressive. Even just like the hair.
Yeah,
like,
this wig choice.
Like this wig. Like, it's just so good. I think the thing was that, like, I wanted to keep watching that movie.
Yeah.
You know? But those movies do exist. So yeah. I can keep watching that movie, basically.
Yeah. And the truth is, like, that movie wouldn't be a comment on the type of movie in general. And that's what Scream turns into. Right. It's almost not worth discussing things that are dated and or problematic, because when it comes to, like, satire and a film that has elements that are making fun of itself, it's not, mm-hmm. it's like the film is self-aware. So, like, there's like no point in, like, judging the script from that perspective.
I think that when we condemn things for being dated or problematic, most of the time that will only happen if it's something explicitly made for young people, like for kids or young teenagers, because it's like, okay, like the tub of lard line, for example.
Yeah.
Like, if, like, for example, when that was, like, in the movie Sleepover, when they were, like, shitting on that little girl for being fat, like, that's one thing. Yeah. Whereas in this movie, I'm not saying that, like, adult men deserve to be shat on for being fat, but I'm just saying it's a different, it makes a different impact.
Yeah, and also the audience is different. The audience is adults for this movie, yeah. And, like, you know, obviously kids watched it too, but I feel like you've got other, it's just not the point to me, like,
it's
at all.
It's not the point. I totally agree.
Like, if you're going to have issue with bringing up lard, then you're going to have issue with actual killings going on.
Trigger warning mention of lard. In terms of dated, though, or whatever, this isn't even dated. I just love the home phone. Relevance.
Oh, I know. I missed that.
So, you know how, like, a lot of the times, especially, like, in Scream, for example, like, you see gore, but you don't see, like, the act of the gore. It's normally, like, the aftermath or, like, the stab and then the shot.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know if, like, the advancement of CGI is, like, making it so you, like, see the active gore happen more?
Yeah. That is completely why. Because, well, it's like two reasons. One is it oftentimes has to do with the rating. You can only get so much of the action of the gore in, and to maintain a rating. You'll notice that more, I feel like, more often in, like, horror PG-13 movies. So there's that. And then there's the aspect, the, like, craft aspect of, do we want to figure out how to do this effect practically, or do we want to leave it up to sound effects and, you know, the action of stabbing or whatever? Sometimes it might be a stronger choice to leave it up to the imagination than to try to capture it. What I'm saying also is that there's another issue, which is kind of, like, I won't go into it too much, but, like, the VFX industry is, like, kind of reaching critical mass right now, where, because those workers aren't unionized, and the demands of that industry, it's like you have less and less time to do more work than ever before. Mm-hmm. And so, and, like, you know, a really huge example of that would be, like, Cats. Like, Cats is what happens when there is way too much work to do for not enough money and not enough time. And so, like, the burnout of those people, those workers, is really high. What it results in is, like, these VFX shots where you're like, what did I just see?
Yeah.
Like, is not right.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I literally just watched a video on this and I am educated on the subject.
Oh, really?
And Cats was the example they used, too.
Yeah, yeah. That's, like, a good recent example. The only shot that in Scream that is, like, pretty noticeably not real is Rose McGowan's head getting squished.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, that's like a decapitated Pirates of the Caribbean puppet. Like, that's what it looks like. Definitely. I did think that was creative. It's also not a way you would die. Like, the garage door would break before you would break. So, to me, it was definitely worth watching. And it was, It was pretty good. I think I would have liked it a lot more if I like was on the inner circle of understanding.
Yeah.
But it was entertaining. That opening is like universally amazing. And I will probably watch the other ones because I am interested to see what happens. Also, we didn't even really talk about Matthew Lillard. He's just a light. He's just a joy and a light to see in anything. That's really all there is to say. And I do pledge allegiance to the flag of his artistry, period.
And I hope you also enjoyed my little segment with Hunter where we really get into it about the Scream franchise. And if you care or want to check out the short film that he is directing and we're both producing, then you can find that information in the description. The Instagram is at From the Flesh Film.
Very cool. I am very excited to witness this process. Wait, also, which reminds me, Audrey's documentary, our documentary, came out this past Friday. And it is available for streaming. Audrey, do you want to share some more details on that?
So you can find the full documentary on our website, twopinkproductions.com/fulloutinsideohioshowchoir. It's just going to be there in perpetuity if you want to watch it.
Yes, I'm excited. Okay, so we will be back next week as always. I hope you're having a good festive time getting ready for Halloween if you're into that, and otherwise that you're ingesting pumpkin flavored shit. I know I am. You can find more from us at evergreenpodcast.com/sleepover-cinema and keep up with our latest creative projects, notably the documentary, at twopinkproductions.com. We're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube at Sleepover Cinema and post a full video version of each episode on YouTube every Thursday.
You can follow me, Audrey, at Audrey Anna Leach on everything.
And you can follow me, Hannah, at Hannah Ray Leach on Instagram and at Lana Von Trapp on Twitter.
You can join our Discord server at the link in the episode description or on evergreenpodcast.com. And also, if you want a phone case that is really cool and pretty, the link to that is in our link tree. And the code is 15SLEEPOVER. And they've done this fun thing where they like put all of the items that we've gotten on that page. So like if you want to match so with us, you could.
And of course, if you like our show, you know what to do. Give us a 5-star rating. Sleepover Cinema is a production of Evergreen Podcasts, produced, edited, and engineered by us, Hannah and Audrey Leach. Sleepover Cinema is mixed by Sean Rule Hoffman with spooky theme music this week by Josh Perlman Hall. And our executive producer is Michael D'Aloia.
Bye. Don't pick up the phone.
Let straight people be serial killers too.
Oh, that's very topical. I don't know who isn't letting straight people be serial killers.
A lot of people.
Are they?
I don't know.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.
This podcast was produced with the support of the Ohio Motion Picture Tax Credit and in partnership with the Ohio Development Services Agency.